Jeff Lawson, good morning.
Good morning, Terence. Good morning, Michael.
Yeah, great to chat, mate. I want to start with this. Chris Gayle was asked. He's doing amazing things over there in T20 in Bangladesh. And he was asked on Twitter if he considers himself Bradman of T20s or the greatest T20 batsman. He said, no, I'm actually the greatest batsman of all time.
In all forms.
Chris has said that he's better than Bradman, essentially.
His record doesn't say that.
Well, he thinks he's better than Bradman.
Well, it's an interesting comparison. How do you feel, first of all, a T20 player?
That's right.
Different people in different eras. Bradman's incomparable. I mean, the word says it all because he averaged nearly 100. What was Chris Gayle's test average?
42,
yeah. Sorry, Chris. Not quite measuring up there, mate.
Well, one thing he's got, he's earned more money out of the game than Sir Don, but...
Well, I don't know. Bradle did okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would have.
He was well ahead of the curve in his era.
Yeah, yeah. For an amateur, he did very, very well.
Now, Hen, I'll start with Mitchell Marsh. Are you happy if Hanscom, and it seems he'll get dropped for Mitchell Marsh, are you happy for Mitch to be regarded as one of the best top six batsmen?
Well, probably not. I mean, he's in reasonable form at the moment, which is good. He's been batting on the whacker, which has been a batting paradise now for some years. It's a bit tough on Hanscom, isn't it? At the start of this Ashes series, two Test matches ago, he was a sure thing, a certainty for every Test match. One of the players we weren't even discussing for the first Test match. You're 2-0 in front.
Yes.
Why make a change? If you're 2-0 down, yeah, you've got a big opportunity there. But when you're 2-0 in front, don't you keep the winning team?
Yeah, it's always been the way, hasn't it? And then there was a bit of conversation in the comm box about it, and a couple of, I think it was KP, sort of said, well, I actually think if you're only making one change to a winning team, that might be a better way to go.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the other thing is that, just because you're winning, you don't really have to keep the same team. But if you're 2-0 in front, the opposition are demoralised, why would you go mucking around with your side? I mean, maybe a part of this is that he's back bowling. We're trying to keep the quicks fresh for a five-test series. Maybe that's a little bit of the thinking. And I can understand that. The good thing in Perth is they don't have to pay travel and accommodation for him to be in the third earning, and he can bowl in the nets. So there's a bit of an upside for that. They're not cutting him to the other side of the country. But, I think it's tough on Hanscom if Marsh plays.
Okay, so you'd pick Hanscom, right? You'd stick solid.
I would. And let's face it, Mitchell Marsh, what's he averaging in Test cricket?
21.
21.
Well, that also tells you what's going on. Are we going to pitch Mitch Marsh for the long haul? Or are we going to stick with Hanscom for the long haul?
For the same reason they're saying Mitch Marsh should play over there, I think this is the best deck for Hanscom to score runs.
Amen.
Yeah. They've failed to see that.
Okay. Well, I think the other issue is this. If you're only replacing Hanscom as a batsman, Mitch Marsh isn't the man to do it. Quite clearly, they want and they're going to get that fifth bowling option. Otherwise, Mitch Marsh is not the next batsman.
He's only bowled 13 overs.
Yeah, but, mate, he's not the next batsman to go into the side.
Remember, they had Glenn Maxwell on standby.
Yeah, that's right.
For the first Test match. So, obviously, they're saying he's the next best player then for the first Test, and he's still made runs in the next couple of Shield games. So, he's another guy's in form, and they already had him as the next batsman, so why would you change your mind there?
That's right.
And you can get some overs out of him if you have to.
So they've picked Marsh as a bowling all-rounder.
Well, we'll let the selectors decide that. If you've got about number six and you're averaging 21, you probably are a bowling all-rounder.
Well, of course. Otherwise, the next best batsman in the country currently is Maxwell.
Yeah, I'd go Maxwell.
If they want to make a change.
So they're picking him as a bowling all-rounder.
Yeah, okay. Gosh. He's a batting all-rounder. But anyway, I see your point. England... I think it's right in saying, Hen, they have competed for long portions of these Test matches, but they're losing key moments. And whether you saw Joe Root bowling first in Adelaide as a key moment, you can do in hindsight, but I think the pitch was doing more than everyone was making out if they bowled better.
I agree on all fronts there, mate. I mean, England have competed like 3.5 days in Brisbane and They're overwhelmed, knock the tail over, and then if you win by 10 wickets, it looks like an absolute thrashing, but it really wasn't. They hung in. They're going to day five. They were still in with a chance of winning the test match.
Yeah.
So they get knocked over on day five by some pretty good bowling. They had been in it. The toss in Adelaide, well, it's all changed there, the pitch and the conditions and pink ball. They're completely different test matches these days, pink ball test matches, so I don't think you can blame Root for that at all. We're always blaming Steve Smith for not enforcing the follow-on, weren't we? I mean,
yes.
Australia had a loss. That would have come in for a huge amount of criticism. So England have been out there competing, but to be honest, the results have gone as we've predicted in Australian conditions. Australian bowling's been better. Our batting's been iffy. It certainly can be strengthened, and England are just not quite good enough in either department, and they are losing virtually every key moment they've lost. So let's give the Australians a big tick for winning those moments, and England, I think that they're giving it a good shot. They just aren't good enough. Just haven't got the cattle.
Yeah.
No. I know this is a studying body language from thousands of k's away. Do they look a happy bunch to you, Henry? They're certainly not that happy when they get out on the drink. They're either headbutting or pouring drinks over each other.
No, well, losing sides.
I don't know. I don't know any Australian batsmen who used to have a few schooners and dance on bars, but I don't know about those sort of guys who may be in this conversation, not for sure. But
yes. Now, listen, Henry. Henry started at Uni of New South Wales.
He was all right.
And you were there that night, so I blame you.
Drinking soda water, mate.
That's right.
He would have been.
Well, imagine the laughs you wouldn't have got.
Can we get it back on topic, you blokes?
Yes.
When you're losing, you really look happy. I mean, Alistair Cook has come up with a mature, it's a straightforward but almost brilliant statement about, look, come on, we've got to realise we haven't got Ben Stokes. We've got to move on. We've got to understand what our culture is. And Cook's the former captain. He's a level head, and maybe his counsel should have been invoked a little bit earlier in this tour, because he's come out and said that they have got a problem. It's not coming to grips with Stokes' absence, and a lot of things have then followed on for that. You lose, you have one too many drinks, things go a little bit astray, and small things, the storms in the teacup end up being big issues.
Yes.
Yes.
If you're up 2-0, you're not even worried about this stuff.
No.
Doesn't get a mention.
No.
But that's the difference between winning and losing.
Yeah, and Hen, we know Trevor Bayliss very well, and I can only imagine, his style is a nice man management style. He would be exasperated by some of the behaviour, and whether you think it's, really bad, or it's the last couple of incidents, I don't think have been that bad, but, I mean, he must be pulling his hair out.
Yeah, no, it's all about perception, and in the bigger scheme of things, they haven't been horrific things by any stretch of the imagination. But when you're trying to win an Ashes series and everybody's got to be heading in the same direction, everybody's got to be, dotting I's and crossing T's, especially when you haven't got the cattle, if you're going to win, you've got to do everything exactly right. They haven't done that. And I saw that little, that press conference from him the other day, and he just looked and sounded exasperated, and he's not that kind of guy. He trusts adults and professional sports people to be exactly that, mature and professional and really giving it their best shot to win. That's what he expects of them. That's why they get paid millions of quid to do that sort of stuff. And he's obviously exasperated by what's happening around him.
Plus, these aren't just teenagers on tour for the first time. These are hardened pros that have been.
They know.
They're 30. They're 30-year-olds.
Yeah, they know.
Most of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not.
Well, I just think they're failing to understand what the Stokes situation has created for them, and that these incidents would probably not be reported. But anyway, so, it could be 5-0, Hen.
It could be. I mean, it depends on, they serve up an absolute road in Perth, and it has been some test matches recently, and in the Sheffield Shield games, it's just been as flat as anything. It could be a struggle, but England have got a bat well, and they don't have six world-class or even test-class batsmen in the top six. They've probably got two and a half, and that's been their issue. And then It is quite flat. I mean, obviously, sometimes it's turned a bit over there, and Nathan Lyon could once again just get stuck into him. He's going like a house on fire, almost quietly in the background. Yeah. While the three quicks are, you know, bossing batsmen around, he's just getting them out. So it's a wonderful attack to have at the moment, even on a flat wicket.
No doubt about that. Good on you, Henry. We thank you so much. Enjoy the test.
I will do.